today's, you know, I would say generation should feel very, very lucky that mental health is being looked at as a very serious and as important as physical health. But back in the day, it wasn't. But the difference between both, in my mind, is the medical aspect of it. The fear of public speaking, which is glossophobia, has been scientifically ranked to be higher than the fear of death itself. You need to know, first thing, put your 10-year goal, then 5-year, then go to your year, and then your dailies.
A lot of people don't know what they want.
How do you become kind to yourself, exactly?
You allow yourself to feel. You allow yourself to get sick. You allow yourself to fail. You allow yourself to fall in love. You allow yourself to have emotions. And you need to be okay with it.
Is there a certain certification that you have to become a life coach?
All right, we're here with a special guest right here at the Bycatch. And I always say that I start the podcast with the guest introducing himself or herself. So it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. The pleasure is all mine. And funny, before we even start, funny enough, himself is not off because my father used to call me Saud because I was the go-to person at home. So yes, my name is Saad Sirkal. I'm a communication strategy enthusiast who's the CEO of Communication Consultancy and MeetSwap. It's an application that's coming out very, very soon, inshallah. Over 20 years of experience in a field that I love. And that is why I always say I'm one of the luckiest people on earth who does what she loves and loves what she does.
It's a rare thing.
Very much. Yeah.
So I would like to ask the first question is being that you do life coaching for sure, right? So what made you really start that path of being in the career path of like life coaching and maybe even teaching other leaders how to be better leaders? I would just...
So the beautiful thing that I was raised by my parents or my father in specific is my career is very dedicated to my dad, Allah yarhamah. So what he did was he made sure that I did everything from the ground up. So I experienced everything in my career. My first job was a secretary. And the first job in the media and the production industry, I used to get water for talent. So I started from there. And today I'm a director and I'm called on to lead on projects.
So you started from the bottom.
From the absolute bottom. And I worked my way up. So when government officials would call me to help them do whatever they do. And I realized that because people started calling me up and take my advice, I'm like, why am I doing it for free? Why don't I actually create this as a business? Because I would love to retire doing something I love, right? I can't imagine myself retiring and sit at home. So this is something that I thought, like, yeah, this is going to be my forever.
How many years into work did you find yourself, okay, I got to start doing this?
Excuse me. I think I've known my entire life that I was born to help. I found my purpose, because I know a lot of people are searching for their purpose. I found my purpose in 2018.
How did you find it exactly?
I survived cancer. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I got out of cancer. I was cleared out and I was given the clean bill of health. It was a roller coaster, an emotional roller coaster that completely shifted my priorities. And it was no longer me kind of situation. It was more of, I realized the impact of what is happening to me, it does to the circle around me. And I'm not talking only about my family, my mom, my dad, my siblings. It was everybody. And that is when I realized I understood the people who love me, the people who don't even know me, who were there supportive, and they were impacted by the idea that I might be gone anytime soon. And just, it was just a flip of a switch that I realized, I'm like, I have a big impact. And I realized that God allowed me, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala allowed me to continue my life because my purpose is to help all these people with whatever they're going through the exact same way that they helped me go through mine.
Felt like you had a second chance.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I was, it's not like, oh, God gave me, my life back. I'm going to give him back. No. I understood because I realized the impact I had. I thought I'm insignificant. I'm going to be very, very realistic. I knew that my family and my friends, my closest circle loved me, but I didn't realize because I still had a social media account. I had an existence on social media, but it was not friends. So it was just people who knew me. And it shocked me that they were so invested emotionally in who I am and my life and whatnot. And I'm like, no, that is my purpose. The fact that I have an impact on people's lives just by existing, why don't I level it up and make it even better? So I dedicated my life since 2018 to help people in any way I can. And right now it's through knowledge and spreading the word and advising and mentoring and making sure that whatever I learned personally is taken forward.
So when it comes to life coaching, it's a very broad subject.
Yes.
How do you really specialize? Do you really specialize in something within life coaching, or is a life coach just about life in general?
So I'm not going to talk about a lot of people. I don't like to compare, right? For me, life coaching is very personal. Life coaching is very, very personal. It is not a one size fits all. So I don't say that I'm specializing in this. The professionally, I specialize in communication, strategy, leadership, creating healthy employee environments, so what have you. When it comes to life, I like to use science as well, because there's a lot of hormones involved. There's a lot of mental status involved. There's a lot of depression involved sometimes, insecurities and all of these things. So if I don't know how to deal with what you're going through, I go and study. So I go pick up a book and I try to understand what the brain does when something like that happened, and I come back and help you. But I tend to have a relationship with my clients first, like understand what they're going through. Because if I understand what ticks you, what makes you angry, I'll know exactly how to advise you to suppress it or to deal with it or to get over it or to understand how to deal, you know, how to make it a better trait.
So how do you know that? Do you just go and poke them and try to know exactly when they become angry or exactly how?
So I did delve into psychology, and I love biology. It's like it's a little secret of mine. So I love biology. I love genetics. I love DNA and whatnot. And because I love these things, I understand how to mentally manipulate someone to give me the information that I would want without asking them the question bluntly. And that helps me. So these conversations would help me a lot to understand. And it shocks people sometimes. Like, how did you know? Well, you just said this word. This word, I know from our context, from your background, from your family, from where your dad comes from his culture, from where mom comes from her culture, this is why you understand the word the way it was said.
So you have to be a very good listener.
Yes, it has to be active listening. I don't listen to be like, oh, no, I remember this in the book, I'm going to implement it. No. You need to actively listen, understand the situation. And there's no problem with saying, you know what? Give me a minute. Let me go back, have a thought about it. Let me think about it, and I'll come back. Some people put coaches and psychiatrists and mentors on such a high pedestal, thinking they're like ChatGPT, that as soon as you ask them, they'll respond within seconds. It doesn't work that way. I'm a human just like you. So there are things that I don't know. I need to go back. The sad part is when a professional thinks that they know everything, and that tends to give bad, you know, advice, and that would completely ruin the person in front of them, their client's life. So
don't you think there's a lot of life coaches that just give a bad name to other life coaches?
Oh, 100%. So so I advise a doctor from Romania, and when we were talking, she's an amazing person, and we were talking, and her husband told me, he's like, Saad, you need to, you know, work with her. You need to work with my wife because she's not able to deal with the stress. But I was like, of course, yeah, we can do coaching. And then I realized that the word coaching triggered her. She's like, I don't like coaching. It's absolute, you know, rubbish. And she started telling me about other coaches that she heard. And instantly I was like, you know what? Forget that word. I don't want to be your coach. I'll be your Tinkerbell. And she's like, what? I'm like, I'll be your conscious. I'm going to be there to advise you, to tell you what's right and what's wrong. I'll pull you away from the edge. So yeah. I'll be your Tinkerbell. And the relationship completely changed. Completely. Her perception of my advice completely changed. Her shoulders dropped. She's like, oh my God, yeah, that's great. And she starts talking, and we got into this discussion just because I removed that word from my dictionary. That's it. And it's just because I saw her like kind of tense up, and she's like, oh, no, I hate them. I don't like them. They're they're not my thing.
Is there a certain certification that you have to have to become a life coach?
I think your education is your certification. Because what is a life coach? It's a person who understands life and can guide you in the things that they understood, right? And they know that they're more profession, they're more professional, and they have the books and the degree to support it. And for me, when I coach in leadership and leadership, I got certification from Boston College. Finance, I got it from London Business School. Communication, got it from Zion University. Business and sciences from Thunderbird. So I've got my qualifications on lockdown. The word coach, and for me to pay X amount of thousands of dollars, for me to be like to work with energy, for me to be a coach, that I personally do not agree with. And I know people are going to come at me, but I honestly don't agree with.
Because there's a lot. There's a lot of differences between life coaching and being a therapist.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Completely different.
How would you define each one as different? So, both of them have active listening.
Yes.
Both of them listen to the client's needs.
Yeah.
And both of them try to solve whatever the needs are.
Yeah.
But how do you defer what is each one's role?
So therapists can refer you to psychiatrists and whatnot, and there's a lot of medicine sometimes that come into it, and there's a lot of deeper issues. So me as a life coach, if I see someone who needs medical attention, so the brain is so far off that I can't deal with it. So you're talking about bipolar people. There are so many chemicals. I suffer from depression, like intensely. You're talking about 2 years of my life that I haven't smiled. And I was wearing all black and hurting myself. I'm very, very honest about
this. Was that when you were young, bro?
It was when I was young. There was a shift in my life that I would rather to keep there and locked away and gone. But there was a shift in my life that I did not understand how to deal with. I stopped smiling. I was wearing black all the time. It was horrible. It was really, really hard. And I felt that like I was alone. Like I was legitimately alone. But when I used to go to therapists, they used to make me feel like I'm crazy. Yes, because it's taboo in our culture back in the day. It's like, what are you talking about? You're supposed to be in the loony bin. So the approach to therapy back then was not in my age. And I am old. So back in the day, it was not as open as it is today. So like, you know, today's I would say generation should feel very, very lucky that mental health is being looked at as a very serious and as important as physical health. But back in the day, it wasn't. But the difference between both, in my mind, is the medical aspect of it. There is medicine. There's a lot of in-depth life coaching. It's based on experiences. So it's like, I went through here. I did that. Oh, yes, this is how I dealt with it, because it might not work. You know, because each one, they would live their life in a different way. Therapy is a completely different ball game. It's much more neurological. There's so much science into it rather than life experiences.
So what do you do when you have a client that has psychological problems?
I do know a lot of licensed therapists and psychiatrists and psychologists. And that's where I don't believe that anyone can do everything on their own. I believe in completing one another in any profession. So I'm not going to go and get my degree and do that and become the one-stop shop for everybody who comes. So I have my
own stack.
Exactly. Would love to, but I don't have time for that. So what I do is I have my circle of friends and professionals and people that I know, and I get them and I refer them. So I have mentors. So when I go into a pickle and I'd be like, whoa, this is much bigger than what I thought, I would go refer to some of them are my clients. So I mentor them while they mentor me, because I have experiences that they don't have, and vice versa. So I would go up to them and I tell them, this is a situation. It's either they tell me, no, Saad, this is something you can do and this is what's happening. Go for it. And I would be boosted with the confidence and we'll go and help that person. Or they would tell me, no, Saad, this is a medical thing. Bring them over, refer them to us, and we'll take care of it our way.
I think before we move to the other subject, you pointed out something really great, that you should not always have the answer for everything. As a life coach, you can share the knowledge with other people, get to get other information from more certified people,
100%.
And then use that to help your client.
100%. I believe one who says knows all knows nothing. And I live by it. So, yeah.
Well, let's go in the topic of Dubai.
Oh, good God.
So, you know, Dubai is more of a fast-paced environment.
Oh, yeah. That's so, an understatement.
How do you see that really impacting people's lives? When it comes to being in a fast-paced environment, everyone is in a hustle culture. They're trying to be very ambitious on the career, going to the top, get as much money as they can, yeah, and succeed.
Yeah. It's sad. It's very, very sad. So let's break it down. The government has a mandate. They have a goal and they need to reach. It's not a want. It's a need because it helps us politically, economically, security-wise. So they have a target. Yeah, and I pray for their strength. Like, honestly, I'm in awe of how well they do it. But that doesn't mean you as a manager in a marketing company need to be as fast as the actual country is going. They have a mandate that is beyond us. But don't mock it, because your body has needs. Your mind has needs. Your soul has needs. Your family has needs. Your friends have needs. And all of that takes a hit because you're not able to catch up.
Mm.
So when we're looking at, for example, HHs and HEs are traveling all around the world and doing, and like, oh my God, they're working all the time. Yes, but they have an entire team behind them that reminds them to do sports in certain times, when to sleep, when to wake up, what to eat, when to eat, and they have their schedule set. You don't have that luxury. So you need to be your own assistant, and you need to allow yourself to eat healthy, to work out, to compartmentalize everything in your life and give it's time. I used to work myself because I fell into that trap. I'm like, oh my God, everybody is succeeding so fast and I'm still stuck behind. And then I realized, I'm like, why? Because I fell in the hospital. I was extremely sick. And that, because I was so stressed, my body used to develop cancer cells.
Mm.
And that was kind of like the eye opener. I was like, wait a second, what am I doing? Let's be realistic. Money, health, family, friends, all comes from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Rizq, sahurallah, He's the one who gives it to us. All I need to do is ask, do the best that I can, and He will give it to me in the right time. Because if it's not the right time, believe me, you're not going to get it. But this is, I feel sad for people who don't listen to their bodies, who don't listen to what they need, and who don't feel, oh my God, they would be stressed, or they would be angry, or they would fall out of a relationship, and they would just, swipe it under the rug, and they would continue. You didn't get over it. You're just delaying the process. It's going to come hit you. Hmm. When my father passed away, I did not grieve. I couldn't grieve, because I'm the eldest. I had to take care of my mom, my siblings, all these procedures. And I didn't cry. I didn't feel sad because it didn't register in my mind. When did I fall apart? A year later.
1 year later?
1 year later.
Why 1 year?
Because it didn't make sense to me. I did not allow myself, because I felt that I had responsibilities towards my friends, my families, my mom in specific. And I was like, I thought, I cannot and I will not be weak because they need me to be strong. But that was my assumption, because each of them, my siblings, are extremely strong. My mom is a superwoman. They were all dealing with their emotions the way they wanted to deal with, but I assumed that they needed me to be strong. So I kept that strong front for a full year. And when I broke apart, I was like, what was I doing to myself? And that's why I'm finalizing a book on grief. And it's the 4 days of the funeral and my father's passing and all the emotions and the things that he taught me. And I felt, for example, when I exhibited patience in these 4 days, my brain used to take me back to the day he taught me patience. So the book goes back and forth, and every chapter takes you through the different stages of grief and what I did to get over it, to help others. Because I realized that, no, you can't do it alone. You need someone to hold your hand and be like, okay, so let's take the next step. And it's fine. It doesn't show you weak. It doesn't show you as a weak person. It shows you that you're a mature, strong person who realizes what they need to get better.
I think a lot of ambitious people think that everything that they have to do it alone.
Because we were trained and it has been drilled into our brains. If you want to do it right, do it on your own.
This is where how the government operates differently. They operate with delegating,
and
trusting leaders to build and develop things for the country. It's not about one man. Maybe one man has the vision, which is our leaders. They are Dubai ruler, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum. He has that vision, but he has that trust that his leaders, that his team will do the things that are needed to be done to develop that vision and make it into reality.
He said in one of the government summit rounds, they were doing an interview with him on stage. And he spoke about that exactly. He's like, the people around me were negative, referring that he had an entire team around him. He's like, when I realized that they will always be negative, I took them out and brought new blood that is positive to actually get the job done. He didn't say, I took them out and I went and did the job myself. He took them out and he's like, no, you're going to go somewhere else because that's better for you. And he brought new blood to come and take over and move forward. So what does it tell you? You can't do it. You shouldn't do it on your own.
For sure.
This is the beauty of diversity, because each person will come from a different perspective and you will have innovative solutions to any challenge that comes at you.
And that's how you prosper.
100%.
Because you're helping other people's lives. You're helping them succeed just as much as you're succeeding.
100%.
And therefore, God rewards you with that.
Yeah.
This is something that truly I discovered this year, where I was stressing myself out. I was burning out, trying to do everything, podcast, social media, TV presenter, everything, being also a full-time engineer. Now, with all of those things, there were things that I could delegate.
Mm-hmm.
There were things that I didn't necessarily have to do myself. I could focus on, as they say, the 80-20 rule.
Yep.
Focus on the 20% that brings me most of those results. Let the 80% of the work that doesn't really do much for me, give it to other people. Help them succeed. Teach them new things, new knowledge. At the same time, you get to have that little bit strike of balance with your other parts of your life. That's something that I've really learned this year before it's ending. Yeah, 2024 is ending quickly.
I know.
It's November.
I know.
Yeah,
it's mind-blowing. On that note, one of the things that I realized that helped me a lot is I stopped believing and working towards work-life balance. As an entrepreneur or an ambitious individual who has multiple things under their belt that they're actively working on, start looking at your life as work-life integration. So I'm a theme park fanatic.
Right.
Every time I travel, I hunt down the theme parks, and I love roller coasters. I just adore roller coasters. And even if my trip was like for 3 days, and one of these days I have meetings back to back, but I know that they're all online, I go to the theme park and have all of my meetings there. So I would be under somewhere in in a very secluded area. I do my meeting online because Zoom and Teams, the past 2 years with everything that's happening and the lockdown and all that stuff, that to me, it was a blessing because it unlocked so many other resources that made our lives easier.
For sure.
So I use my phone, do my meeting, get my things done, close up. Thank you so much. Walk up to the roller coaster, have fun, come downstairs. I have another 20 minutes. I have another meeting. Go eat. This is what I started doing. And I realized it is such a stress reliever because I'm having fun finishing my work, getting my stuff done. And it's all good. It's all kosher.
That's easy if you're doing it by yourself, but with the family members just waiting around, come on, just finish it already. Let's just go and enjoy the fun. You can do this anytime. So there's a lot of struggle between integrating your work, but also assuring that you give enough time to the family.
So I have a very strong belief when it comes to that. If you are an entrepreneur, whether you are male or female, your family, you won't be an entrepreneur unless your family is supportive.
Mm-mm.
Let's be realistic. Because being an entrepreneur is tough. Having a career is very tough. So I'm not married. I'm not blessed to be married. And I don't have any kids. So it's me and my mother, right? And we travel together most of the time. And whenever we're traveling, I explain to her how work-life integration is all about. And of course, we know mothers and our parents, our fathers and our mothers are put in a high pedestal and everything that they want is done, right? But I sat with her and I was like, I can't ignore her and do my work while she's waiting for me until I'm done so I can, like, you know, enjoy the day with her or go out. So I explained to her, I was like, this is the situation. This is what, so it's either we travel and I work or I have to make our trip shorter and further apart. So when she understood what I mean by life and work integration, she completely supported me. So I would do this. She's like, you know what? You do you. I need 20 minutes. I'm going to go do this and come back. So she goes and gets busy and comes back and we continue our day by the time I'm done. If I'm not done, she's on her phone. You know what I mean? So for you to be able to do work-life integration with a family, your family needs to understand what it means to have work-life integration. And you need to be responsible enough to understand that it has to be sporadic. You can't be going out with your family for 2 hours and be working for 2 hours while you're out. That doesn't mean that you're going out with your family. It means that you're just there by body and by ATM.
So if I'm using my phone while I'm there out there with my family, does that mean not?
For the entire time, that doesn't make sense. Sit down at home or in your office. It's better. They would actually enjoy themselves much more better without you because they're going to be worried. Do you want to go here? Do you want to go there? And you're just busy. You're not with them. But for example, okay, I'm going to go out with my family from 6 to 9. I have a phone call from 7 to 7:30. That's fine.
Okay.
Your family will understand. But if you can't be there mentally, present, exactly in the moment for the entire time, I am telling you, don't go out with the family. Just stay at home, finish your work, and just let them have fun.
So going with all this information that we have now,
yeah,
and focusing on Dubai, what would you advise those young professionals exactly?
Be planners. Put an action plan. What I do is day by day, I would sit. I have a notepad. This is what I would want to do today. So actually, no, let's take a step back. Set your 10-year plan, your 10-year goal, not plan, 10-year goal. This is where I see myself in 10 years. Take it back 5 years. This is where I see myself in 5 years. And now in these 5 years, go to your year. This year, what do I want to do to get to that 5 years goal? Put that, it's a live document. Put your plans for that 10-year. Set your goals quarterly. Because when you have specific goals, you're not going to disperse and spread yourself thin. Because khalas, you know exactly what you want to do to get to that goal. So put your 10-year plan, your 10-year goal, put your 5-year goal, and put your yearly goal. Put your KPIs. Put your kind of like a sensor every 3 months to check, gauge yourself. Am I on the right track when I'm not in the right track? If you realize that you steered away from your goal, you need to cut that off and go back or change your goal. Because then if you're spending so much time on something else, that means that was not actually your goal. So you need to change your plan so that you could go back into track. If you have goals and KPIs and you start ticking them off, that would help you so much in creating a schedule for yourself. So I'm writing a book. I lead 2 companies. I do my online content. I do podcasts. I advise. And I have a 7-to-3 job. And I travel. And I have fun.
But do you think this is very easy for most people?
It is if you plan. So
a lot of people that I just to go to the topic, yep. A lot of people don't know what they want.
Exactly.
They don't know the goals. They don't know their purpose.
Exactly.
So how do they find
it? So this is what I'm telling you. You need to know first thing, put your 10-year goal, then 5-year, then go to your year, and then your dailies.
They might change it in any moment.
Adi, so? So I wanted to be a computer engineer. And then, because my father, Allah rahimah, was a computer engineer. And then I wanted to be an archaeologist. And then I wanted to be a biologist. And then I wanted, good God, I changed my goals so many times until I was like, you know what, let's do communications.
But if you change it every time, don't you think that most people are just wasting their time? They could have put that time in one thing and focused, dedicated for that for maybe a period of 1 year to 2 years, and they would have made something really amazing for themselves.
I started with computer science. Now I don't need IT help. I actually do my own thing. I wanted archaeology. I'm very interested in history, so I can understand what backgrounds mean and how they affect people. I loved biology, so now I understand when my limitations are, so I know exactly when to tell people to go to an actual doctor. And communications is my forte. Everything that you do feeds into your future. If you decide it's a lesson, if you decide it's a waste of time, it's a lost period of time. I have never let anything in my life go to waste. My entire career, when I first started in communications, you need to understand, I started in entertainment, events, production houses, TV houses, all that stuff. And then I went to media companies. I worked in agencies. My life was completely adverts, design, and whatnot. And then I get a phone call from a utilities company. It's the largest in the world. And I'm just like, what am I supposed to do in a utilities company? I was like, you know what? Challenge accepted. Took the job, got there, 3 months, all I did was ask. One of my siblings is an engineer. Sat with him. TJ, what is this? How do I understand? Explain to me. I picked up books. I researched, took classes online just for me to understand the lingo. Because it's hard as an engineer to speak to, as a non-engineer to speak to engineers. And I'm definitely sure that you know. So I was like, you know what? All right, I'll study this. And I did. Within the first year, I had a meeting with a ministry and there were engineers and someone asked me, and actually someone called me Engineer Saad. And I'm just like, no, I'm not. Like, but you speak like one. I'm like, because I'm educated, because I educated myself on it. So I moved. I left the utilities. It was in energy. I left that area and I went on to my life. And subhanAllah, I'm advising people in the energy field.
All through education. Yeah. Educating yourself.
All through the experiences. It's not about, I wouldn't have educated myself if I was not put in that situation. But I looked at it as an opportunity. So I was like, you know what? Yeah. It's fine. It's an opportunity. Let me do this. So now I'm speaking to people and I realized what I learned in that company is helping me with the sustainability, circular economy, how to actually make companies green. And now today, the CEOs and the chairpersons and the ministers and the government officials that I'm advising, what do they want? Sustainability, circular economy, how to make your organization as green. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, oh my God, subhanAllah. So because I decided that this is an opportunity and it's just not a waste of time, everything that I learned, they're stuck in the back of my head and now I'm utilizing it again. So no, it's not a waste of time.
Wonderful perspective,
yeah.
I'll say. So when it comes to a quote, there's a quote that I want to tell you about from John Maxwell. I'm sure you know him.
Yep.
Very powerful author in leadership. I'll say the quote, yeah, and then you tell me how does it resonate with you. A leader is one who knows the way, goes the way, and shows the way. How does this resonate with your own view of leadership?
So, a leader doesn't know the way, to be very honest. A leader is the one who decides to learn the way and to be the first one to take the step. This is what I believe. There's a lot of things that leaders need to be the risk takers with. So shows the way and leads it. That's definitely correct. But sometimes leaders really don't know. They know the strategy. They know the vision. They know where they want to go. But how to get there? What's the actual action plan? Sometimes it's trial and error. And I beg everyone to understand that it is okay to make mistakes. It is okay to be like, this way didn't work. What's not okay is for you to make mistakes, not rectify them, and not learn from them. But yeah.
Very well sound advice to the leaders. So what do you believe are the core qualities of a great leader? you're going to say that?
Active listening. Knowing, having conflict resolution skills. And the number one trait is being human. So compassion, empathy.
Emotional intelligence?
Emotional intelligence, yes, definitely. That plays a huge role. But it's being human. So with my teams, I always tell them, tell me your excuse and I shall excuse you. So if someone picks up the phone and tells me, Saad, today is no bueno. My brain is not braining. I'm like, yeah, stay at home. Stay at home. Are you sure? No. What were you going to do in the office if your brain is not braining? Nothing. You're irrelevant to me right now today. So stay home, chill, go to the spa, do whatever you need to do, and get better and come back tomorrow. The way they come back and the way they produce the next day is unbelievable. And why is it? What I mean is being human is I put myself in their shoes. So when my brain is not braining, I always wished that some people would come to the office and I would clock it. And I'd be like, you know what? You're not feeling too well today. Please pack your stuff and go home. Actually, go to the cinema. Lunch is on me. Just leave the office. Go do something else and then come back. Because I understood, I put myself in that situation. I was like, I wished someone saw that I was depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I wish someone told me, you know what? Just do you. You do you. And then come back better.
So as a leader, you should look into your team and see what type of things they're facing within their own lives.
Mentally. Because
how do you go about it as a leader when you're asking the team?
So we have, in my 9-to-5 job, I would like to call it. So we start at 7. We attend at 7. So we're all in the office at 7. Not because we're morning people. Believe me, we're not. But from 7 to 8, we have coffee time. And we speak about everything but work. So what they did last night, what did they cook?
Every day?
Every single day.
Doesn't seem that bothersome. Oh my God, I got to go at 7 a.m. and be there.
I am excited.
Oh, wow.
To be at work at 7 o'clock in the morning. And anyone who knows me or knows me from back in the day knows that I will not go to the office before 9.
Mm.
Or used to. But today, I cannot wait to be in the office at 7. I can't wait to sit with my team. I can't. The relationship that we have is beyond the realms of our building. It's much more. One day, you know when you have the one day flu?
Mm-hmm.
So I woke up in the morning, my head, I felt the congestion. I can't breathe. My head is painful or hurt painful. My head is hurting me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to take a sick day because I listened to my body a lot. I was like, I will not push myself. I'm just going to go to sleep. So I did. Phone calls, messages, people came to my house. Are you okay? Because I live alone in Abu Dhabi. So they were like, are you okay? I'm like, okay, you guys, calm down. It's fine. But that's the love. They wanted to make sure that I am okay. And I would not change that for the world. So yes, every single day, 7 o'clock, coffee time, talk about everything but work. And that is what gives loyalty, love, compassion, and unbelievable productivity.
How do you deal with the team members who don't want to be part of that?
I don't have any team members who don't want to be part of that.
Okay. So you just...
none of them.
Mm.
None of them. So the first thing that I did when I got that 9-to-5 job, and it's very important, I think I'm going to give this as an advice. Invest, because as a leader, you don't do the day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
As a leader, your job is to look at the strategy, look at your end goal of the year, what you need to accomplish for the company or the organization, and make sure that your team is aligned and they're doing their job. So the first thing, and specifically when you get hired mid-year, first thing that I did, I sat down with each individual, asked them, what do you do? And then, are you happy doing it?
Okay.
As soon as I did that, I realized not a single member was doing what they actually like to do.
So what was your solution?
Reshuffled everyone.
Based on your current department or shuffling them even to other departments?
No. I asked. I'm like, do you guys want to be in communication or do you not want to be in communication? Like, this is also a very serious question. And they're like, no, we want to be communication, but I don't want to be marketing. I want to write. You know what I mean? I don't want to do social media. I want to, like, you know, do my podcast. Like, and I want to write scripts or something. So I shuffled the entire department internally with the blessings of our human resources. And I was like, okay, as soon as we put that, the productivity from here to there, to the limit that the chairman thought that I changed the team. He's like, did you hire new people? I'm like, no, it's the same people, same agency, same everything, just better procedures. And the team members are doing what they want to do. So that shift, it just creates, and the fact that I sat down, I understood, restructured, redid the job descriptions, invested so much time to create that healthy work environment. Let me just say that I'm going to be leaving the organization. Everybody will put their resignations. They're like, we're going to go with you. Like, where are you going to go? Because they're not technically going with me. They're going with the environment that I've created.
It's a healthy environment.
100%.
What about the job that no one wants to do? What do you do in that case? I'm sure there are certain moments where people don't want to do that job, no matter what.
Yeah. No, we have to do it.
Mm. So who takes that?
No, they have to do it. Mm. It's because you give them 80% or 90% healthy, like, you know, work that they love and everything, that 10% that nobody wants to do, they'll do it just because they're grateful.
Mm.
Get what I mean?
Okay.
So, like...
So if there was, like, you're shuffling them around and there's that one job and this person is fixed to that one job and everyone hates that job.
Yeah.
Do you just spread out this specific job tasks to everyone?
So it depends, right? So it depends on the actual section, job, position, whatever. If it has to be all together clumped up, then you guys, someone needs to bite the bullet. Someone needs to do the job and it is what it is.
Just accept it.
Just accept it. Exactly. This is life at the end of the day. But if it is different tasks and functions clumped into a job, then we can spread it out. Nakhalas. All of us need to do this together. You know what I mean? So yeah.
So what about some of the unfortunate leaders that you find? Like, what are the qualities that you find in leaders that are not doing the great job that they're supposed to do? Or not doing their job as a leader or a true leader? What would you say?
Take a moment and remember your beginning of your career. How did you feel?
They must have felt terrible. Maybe they had a bad leader.
That's why they became bad leaders.
Yeah.
Because the way I look at my office is the exact same way I look at home. So I'm the parent. These are my children. They do good. I reward. They make mistakes. I need to teach, not reprimand. There's a huge difference. I need to teach. So, and then when you look at home, when you see a friend of yours and you'd be like, dude, what is wrong with this man? What do you automatically say? He's not raised well. You don't say, and it's him, it's his personality. No. It's his parents who didn't raise him well. Why? So it's by example. So the parents are not good people. He becomes not good because he thinks this is normal. So a bad leader most probably has lived amongst bad leaders who glorified this as good leadership.
Like micromanaging?
Micromanaging, being too money-oriented, forgetting the relationships.
Money-oriented?
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
I don't look at goals at the end of the day. I look how much money did I make.
Return investment?
Yes. Yeah, which doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Logically, you need 2 years to break even in a new business. Because if you break even within the first 2 years of you starting a business, two thumbs up, you're actually a successful business. After the 2 years, you need to start thinking about your profit net profit margin, right? And then you can go up and up and up. That if your team is not happy and they're not excited about it and they don't feel invested and they're not loyal to the brand, do you think they're going to answer your phone after the 40 hours?
Got it.
Or the 8 hours per day? They won't. I used to have an employee who was disconnected, would walk in at 7, would leave at 3, and if you could do it, I could do it. Let that person answer the phone after 3 o'clock. The mobile phone switches off.
Is that a good thing?
That's a horrible thing. It's a horrible thing. Not because I want to get in touch with this employee and why can't you help me, blah, blah. But what affected is that we had to give in a report about the employees during this employee's vacation days. So they shifted the days and it happened to be in that employee's vacation days. I couldn't get to that employee to be able to give them a good review. So it affected them. It didn't affect me. I don't care. Like, it's not my career, it's yours. But because they were disconnected, because they didn't think that I, as management, would be interested in their well-being, they're like, dude, I don't wanna even want to like speak to you after my working hours. And that's not good. That's not good for them. So I sat down with this employee and I was like, okay, I need to understand, why did you get disconnected? And then the stories started to come out. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, oh my God, this can't be real. Like, you cannot have been treated this way. Shifted everything today. Whether I speak early in the morning or late at night or they're on vacation, their phone is always on. They're always engaged in our group WhatsApp. They eat lunch with us. They speak. It's a completely different dynamic and they're invested in what they do.
I think because you were the active listener, listening to their core problems that they had in the past.
Yeah. That's the responsibility of a leader. It's not to send emails and not. No. It's to listen, to create, and provide. Just like a parent.
For sure.
Yeah.
Now, mashallah, you have a really good speaking skills. You know, this is one of a trait of a leader. He must be great at speaking, or she must be great at speaking. How does someone improve their public speaking skills?
Reading.
Reading?
Yes.
How?
Because when you read, you gain more vocab. And if you read and you get stuck with a word, you need to get out a dictionary or a thesaurus. Okay, get out. Now, and like, yeah, now you can see how old from the older generation, get out of dictionary. Go to Google, search for the word and understand how to enunciate it, etc. So when you put that much effort into studying these words, it allows the word to resonate into that. And then you expand your vocab. So therefore, because most of the people are afraid to speak a certain language and afraid to speak in public because they're afraid that they would lose the words and they don't know how to express themselves. So once you improve your vocab, you're no longer afraid to express yourself. And once you're not afraid to express yourself, you start becoming a good speaker.
Interesting perspective that you're mentioning, that we might not have enough vocabularies in our mind to speak out.
Yeah.
Right. Good perspective. What about in terms of the dialect and the way that you speak the words, the volume, the tone, the tempo?
So I have a 2-day course. If you would like me to give that to you, I'm definitely there to do it. But I'll tell you something. This is what most... So, okay, step back. The fear of public speaking, which is glossophobia, has been scientifically ranked to be higher than the fear of death itself.
I was assuming so, yeah.
So if you're afraid of public speaking, do not think that you're weak or this is something weird. I am telling you, it is scientifically classified more intense than the fear of death itself. So let's put that on the side. Why does glossophobia take place? Because you're so worried about how you look like and how you sound like. If you practice and practice and practice, no matter how simple your language is, your vocab is, your accent doesn't matter. You just need to enunciate. So you need to make sure that your enunciation is proper. So this is why I tell my students, please video shoot yourself, like, you know, tape yourself so you can listen again and again and see what, you know, works, what doesn't. But simply, the audience doesn't care how you look. How many times have you watched a TED Talk and the guy on stage is wearing shorts and a polo shirt? Nobody cares how you look like. What do they care about? The information that you're delivering. They don't care about your accent. And I've seen some people that I'm like, your accent is so thick, but I've clocked the information and I like it. Write it down.
Just the value that you
provide. Exactly. Has nothing to do with the way you look, your accent, where you're coming from. None. Nada. Nothing. They care about what value do you bring to the table. If your information is solid and sound, you're going to be the most amazing public speaker ever because everyone's going to wait for every single word you're about to say.
Another sound advice, yeah. I would say. What has been the most meaningful moment in your career life or as a whole that really shaped you, other than the cancer treatment that you had to go through?
My content and whatever I write is being taught at universities and schools. That, for me, is just everything. And the funny thing is, so the first time I realized that my writing gets taught is actually my sister. So my sister is 10 years younger than I am. And she comes to me, she's like, you're in university. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, we were writing and they gave us an article and they're telling us this is how an article is written. And she's reading it and I have a style in writing. She's like, this sounds so familiar. This person writes and it sounds so familiar. She reads and she flips the page and it says, written by Saad Jamal Sarkar. And she's like, oh my God, we're learning my sister's content. And I felt, I was like, oh, okay, that's great, blah, blah, everything's fine. And then there's a teacher, if I'm not mistaken, in the Philippines. He sends me a video of him using my content with his high schoolers and juniors to learn how to be public speakers and how to live life and how to become future leaders.
Yeah, well.
And that to me, just, I'm about to cry. So, and that to me is just like the most amazing moments in my life at all. Like, you know, there's no comparison. This is
like your words and your thoughts have traveled across the world to another country in a small place.
Exactly.
It's just reaching out to them.
Exactly. That to me is just everything. Like, and as we go back to the purpose, I said, I knew what my purpose is and it just came to fruition in front of me. And I can't thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala enough for allowing me to be this and do this.
So one of your greatest purposes is to help people.
Yes.
Now, help me and help the audience here. We're giving us the best piece of life advice that has been given to you. You can share it with us.
The best, actually, I'll give you two.
Go ahead.
I'll give you a corporate one and I'll give you a life one. And corporate, specifically when it comes to communications and writing. A teacher once told me, Saad, if you want to write in English, think in English. And if you want to write in Arabic, think in Arabic. This is my, and I cannot thank him enough for teaching me that. Because now my Arabic is written very well because I think Arabic and I write Arabic. And my English is being taught because I think English and I write English. On a life perspective, my father, Allah yarhamah, told me, be kind to yourself. And that was the best advice I could ever have gotten in my entire life, is for me to be kind to myself. Because we seem to forget sometimes to be kind to ourselves.
How do you become kind to yourself exactly?
You allow yourself to feel. You allow yourself to get sick. You allow yourself to fail. You allow yourself to fall in love. You allow yourself to have emotions. And you need to be okay with it. And when you feel jealous of someone, you need to be okay with being jealous of someone. But understand that jealousy, that you don't need to hurt that person. Make it constructive jealousy. He became...
use it to empower you. To empower your next action.
Yeah. Just like be kind to yourself.
Great. Now, going to my last two questions that I have for you. If you could go back to your younger self, that moment where you're giving water to as a secretary, what type of advice would you give to her?
You're on the right track. Don't change a thing. Because if I changed one thing in my past, I wouldn't be here today. So I believe that every good, bad, and ugly had a hand in making me the woman that I am today. So if I saw myself giving that water on the beach of Jabal Ali on a 3 o'clock in the morning shoot, I would be like, Saad, you're on the right track. Don't change a thing.
I would tell myself to go buy Bitcoins. That was sure, for sure changed my life ahead, you know?
I did that and I built my car. I'm a car fanatic. So I built my car using my money from Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. I would definitely, because I'm a risk taker. I believe in high risk, high reward. So this is why I'm telling you, I would not change a thing. Because for me, it was always a leap of faith. I'm like, you know, but what's the worst thing that can happen? I stopped saying that to myself. I always say, what's the best thing that can happen if I take this leap of faith? And ta-da.
You're still in crypto?
Yeah. I took master classes. I educated myself. I got myself into a community of master crypto gurus, that they call them. And I trade.
Has it been successful?
Yeah.
I got to learn more from you. I got to know this one. We got to make another podcast about crypto.
Believe me, I'm very, very high maintenance to myself. So I need to make sure that I maintain my lifestyle for me. So yes, so I took a leap of faith, and I'm always educating myself to continue to live that. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Now, for the listeners listening here, how can they best reach you?
So the best way to reach me is on Instagram, definitely. And on Instagram, there's my email. So email me. Just click that email button and talk to me. It's SJ El Serkal. That's the Instagram handle. I'm not too active on X.
Can you spell it? SJR?
SJALSERKAL.
All right. And the best way is not through the DM, through the email.
Oh, no. Oh, my God, no. So, oh, I'm so embarrassed.
I'm sure there's a lot of people. I face that in myself.
I am so embarrassed. So, I didn't know this till recently. That, yes, you do get the requests, but then in your requests, you have hidden.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered that. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of messages that I haven't responded to in so long. And I'm trying. I swear to God, I am trying. So yes, please email me, because that would be the best way to get to me. Yeah.
Wonderful. I'm always curious. What is the most thing they ask you about? Is it about their life problems? What are they going for?
So the number one question I get asked, where are you from? You know, so anyone who doesn't live in the UAE, I understand that question, because, you know, Serkal, it's very easy. You know, Serkal, you know, automatically, basically. The second question, are you married? I'm not really sure why people are so invested in if I'm single or not. And then those are the only two questions that I really get. But then I get their problems, and it is heartbreaking how many people are broken on this planet. When I mean broken, they're broken. And I'm trying my very best to answer every single one of them, because I feel like it's my duty to help, to not fix. They're not destroyed. To help mend their wounds and maybe get them on the right path.
Well, that's your purpose in life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm sure that now you know the hidden feature of this. So you probably can reply to them. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.